Let's get going. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our latest edition of Employment Law 101. Absolutely delighted you could join us today. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Peter. I'm a partner with MPM Legal. We're a specialist employment law and business immigration practice. We're based in the south of England, but we work with employers that are all over the world, and they have a common interest, which is employing people here in the UK, and that's where we help them. Delighted, as ever, to be joined by my colleague, Adrienne. Good morning, Adrienne.
Good morning.
We're joining you, or you are joining us, from quite an overcast but mild Berkshire today. It looks sunnier where you are, Adrienne, than where I am, even though we're not particularly
More, that's because I've got more windows. It's definitely overcast and probably about to rain, apparently.
Send it my way. Yeah, I've had a thunderstorm warning. Just a couple of housekeeping matters before we get into it today. None of what we're talking about constitutes actual legal advice. My insurer will thank me for saying that. So always seek professional legal advice if your circumstances warrant it. We'd be delighted to oblige. This session has been recorded. You can get our past video recordings on our website, MPM Legal. You can get all the audio recordings on Spotify, Amazon and Apple as well. And I don't know, I think we're up to about 67 recordings. So there's loads for you to feast your ears on. In terms of this session, please do ask away in terms of questions. I've opened up the chat function to everybody, so you should be able to send messages using chat down at the bottom. If you've got a question for us, though, please don't use the chat. Use the Q&A bit, and it just helps us to manage them. Today's session may be a little shorter. Famous last words. We make them up a little bit short, and that's because we're talking specifically about one particular case today that we thought would be very, very interesting.
Indeed. So we are going to dive into a landmark case decided earlier this year, actually, by the Court of Appeal, which is the case of Higgs versus Farmers School. Now, I'm sure that a lot of you will have read about this. It's pretty topical. But the reason that we're going to talk about it today, because the school has just had their request for permission to appeal to the Supreme Court refused. So in essence, we're at the end of the line with the Court of Appeal judgment. And the case itself raises some important issues around freedom of belief, freedom of expression, and where employers stand when personal views that its employees want to express will clash with organisational values or indeed put the reputation of the employer at risk. So it is a very interesting case. And the claimant, Christy Higgs, she was a Christian, and she is a Christian, and worked as a pastoral administrator at Farmers School. Now, obviously, that pastoral, for those of you that don't know, is all about sort of supporting well-being and values, sort of non-academic stuff in the school environment, including things like sex education as well. So she reposted, and I'm going to emphasise the word reposted, some social media content which opposed LGBT inclusive education. And the post used provocative language like "they're brainwashing our children." And these were the reposts that she did. One of the posts opposed the teaching that gender is fluid and not binary, which is obviously a very hot topic at the moment following the Supreme Court ruling. And another post contended that same-sex marriage cannot be equated with traditional marriage between a man and a woman. Now, the school received one complaint from a parent, and the complaint was actually anonymous, saying that the posts were homophobic and contained prejudiced views. The school investigated and eventually dismissed Mrs. Higgs for gross misconduct. It's worth noting that Mrs. Higgs' record at school was absolutely fine, absolutely clean. There were no issues with how she treated students, both in the sort of like her behaviour towards them and in her teaching. But the school's concern centred very much on the reputational risk that we talked about and whether her views might impact and might affect her conduct in the future. Some other key points. Well, Mrs. Higgs' Facebook page was in her maiden name, made no mention of the fact that she worked at or was affiliated with the school in any way, and only those who were friends with her on Facebook had access to her page. And it's important to remember then that the employee was not disciplined for conduct in the workplace. This was about the Facebook posts, which were personal, posted under her maiden name. And as I said, it's all about the school's concern, having received this one complaint that that there was a risk to the school's reputation. I need to put my teeth in today, Peter. And there were some sort of, they were concerned that there might be potential assumptions about her behaviour towards pupils. Although, as I've said, she had a clean record. I think she'd been there for 6 years, and sort of that was something that they were making those assumptions on.
Yeah, I mean, I think also she said as part of her case that the repostings that she did of these Facebook messages related to concerns she had about, I think it was about another school, a primary school, I believe, but I think it was a primary school that one or more of her own children
That's
attended.
right.
So
Yeah.
so she said it wasn't even in the context of
Her role.
You know, and her role there in question. So there are, you know, all sorts of little interesting details with this. Let's just talk a little bit about the legal journey that she's gone on, because I think that this has been like a 5-year odyssey for her, such is the pace of justice within the UK tribunal system at the moment. It's quite a difficult environment for everybody concerned. Obviously, the main bit of legislation that we're concerned with in this case is the Equality Act. And, you know, many of you will know that the Equality Act provides for protection based on 9 protected characteristics. I'm not going to do what we've been doing in these training sessions Adrian and I have been running recently, which is ask you to chip in and name them all. Suffice to say that we're talking about things like age, race, sex, disability. And of course, one of those 9 protected characteristics is religion or belief. Now, religion can include not having a belief in a religion as much as having a religious belief, and beliefs cover philosophical beliefs as well. Now, over the years, case law has evolved and interpreted the Equality Act, so far as religion and belief is concerned, to give us as and employers more information about the type of beliefs that can be protected. And some of them, on first blush, look like the sort of things that you wouldn't necessarily associate as being capable of protection in an employment law context under the Equality Act. So you've got things like a belief in anti-fox hunting practices as being acceptable, something that's capable of protection in law. There was a case involving an employee in relation to climate change and, you know, his belief in climate change as justification for why he didn't wish to travel on transatlantic flights in terms of business travel. Again, the courts have found that that's capable of protection. What we get to here with this case is a decision, and this is where it's interesting because it intersects with the Supreme Court ruling recently in terms of the Equality Act, and it's gender critical beliefs. And we know from the Forstatter case, the EAT determined that gender critical beliefs, such as a belief that gender is binary, is something that is capable of protection under the Equality Act as a belief. And they're the sorts of beliefs that Mrs. Higgs held. So she brought her claims of direct discrimination and harassment on the grounds of religion or belief under sections 13 and 26 of the Equality Act. Now, and this isn't particularly controversial, the tribunal accepted that her beliefs were protected under the Equality Act. So her belief in opposition to gender fluidity and a belief in traditional marriage, as it's described, they're both capable of protection under the Equality Act. But the Employment Tribunal dismissed her claim. So the tribunal said, well, it wasn't the beliefs that caused the problem as such, but what they described as the provocative way that she expressed those beliefs, and it was that which caused the problem. So the tribunal's objection was to the language and the way that those beliefs were expressed rather than the belief itself. Now, unsurprisingly, Mrs. Higgs appealed that employment tribunal decision and went to the Employment Appeals Tribunal, the next tier up. Now, the Employment Appeals Tribunal disagreed with the tribunal's finding. Now, the Employment Appeals Tribunal found that the tribunal hadn't properly considered whether the school's actions were because of the manifestation of the protected belief, and they hadn't conducted a proportionality assessment. And that's something that's required under human rights law. And we'll come on and talk a bit more about that in a moment. So the Employment Appeals Tribunal granted the appeal. They said, yep, we're going to uphold this appeal, but we're not going to make any findings about the substance of the case. Instead, what we're going to do is use our powers, and this commonly happens, we're going to remit the case back down to the Employment Tribunal, and the Employment Tribunal can have another go, make another decision. Now, the EAT basically criticised the tribunal for failing to consider the link between the posts or the reposts that were made on Facebook and the beliefs that Mrs. Higgs held, and also this failure to apply the proportionality. That was the EAT's criticism. Now, this is where it gets a little bit more interesting because Mrs. Higgs, despite the EAT saying, yeah, we're going to remit this down to another employment tribunal, she appealed the EAT's decision to do that. And she basically said, well, you shouldn't remit it back to the employment tribunal. What you should do is rule on the claim as a whole, and you should do so in my favour. And that's where we then get to the Court of Appeal at this stage.
Yeah, I thought it would just be worthwhile pointing out that, you were saying about the EAT remitting cases back to the employment tribunal. Very often they'll do that if they see that there's a sort of a breach in the reasoning, or there might be a breach of procedure by the employment tribunal. So instead of stepping in and say, this is the decision you should have made, like in this case, they would say, well, actually, you've failed to properly consider this aspect of the claim, which is why they then send it back to a different tribunal to kind of work through it all over again. So in other words, it's giving the employment tribunal a sort of a direction that, okay, go back, look at the facts of the case and properly consider it this time and see what judgment you reach. So it's open to them to do that, and that's the bit that Mrs. Higgs actually pushed on, which I haven't seen very often in that situation. She
No,
wanted the
me neither.
EAT not to send her all the way back through the employment tribunal. I mean, you can understand why, obviously, in terms of costs and time, etc., but to basically set straight and put in a decision. So anyway, coming on to the Court of Appeal. Now, they looked at it and they ruled and they held that Mrs. Higgs' dismissal was unlawful discrimination on the ground of religion and belief. And while sort of employers can object to how a belief is expressed, they've got to show that any interference over their decision is proportionate. And we've often talked about justification and proportionality in discrimination laws. But the court said the school's response, i.e., to dismiss her immediately for gross misconduct, was disproportionate. And in particular, what they noted was that in their view, the posts weren't gratuitously offensive. And certainly there have been other cases about posts that have been gratuitously defensive, and that's very different. They were reposts, so it wasn't her language, she was reposting what other people had said. And critically for me, when I read the decision, there was no actual reputational damage that had occurred. Okay, so that's sort of the school had said that's what they were worried about, but they weren't actually able to, well, the court found they hadn't put forward sufficient evidence to show that. So what the school could have done, says the Court of Appeal, is that they could have clarified their stance instead of dismissing her. And one of the other things that we've talked about in the sort of like the background to this case that they didn't take into consideration is Mrs. Higgs' behaviour or conduct in the classroom itself. She had no prior conduct issues, and she put forward a wealth of evidence to say, nor would she, bring those views into the classroom themselves. So in short, dismissal was, as they said, unquestionably a disproportionate response. So even if the views may well have been unpopular or offensive to some, the law still protects their manifestation unless harm or disruption clearly outweighs those rights. And that's the balance that they looked at.
Yeah, I think that's interesting as well because one point that I saw in the judgment just related to, it was maybe expressed in slightly different terms, but essentially, I think the school were trying to rely on a kind of lack of insight from Mrs. Higgs or a lack of contrition about the stuff that she was reposting, which actually, if she's saying, well, I genuinely hold these beliefs and they're my beliefs and they're rooted in Christian values, what do I need to feel contrite about? That's a stance she may well have taken, but I think the school tried to lean into that as well in terms of justification for why it took the decision to dismiss as well. I mean, we're going to come on and talk about some of the practical effects of this and in terms of the stuff that we see coming across our desks as well, but it's definitely not uncommon for businesses to be in touch where they're saying stuff's been posted on social media and we think it's going to cause reputational damage, or it's caused reputational damage just because there's something out there that is kind of more visible or has the potential to be shared or picked up. And you've got to think very carefully in terms of what steps you actually need to work through in making these decisions, particularly where dismissal's concerned. And that's where you kind of crash into what the Court of Appeal have said in this case, which is where you're dealing with these cases where it's an expression of a belief and a belief that's protected under the Equality Act. The dismissal of an employee simply because they've expressed a protected belief, which the employer or another third party where it wants to protect its reputation objects, so the employer objects to it or a third party objects to it. That dismissal will constitute unlawful direct discrimination within the ambit of the Equality Act. However, if the dismissal is motivated not just by the expression of the belief, but by something objectionable in terms of how that belief was expressed, and that needs to be looked at on an objective basis, then the dismissal will be lawful if, but only if, the employer shows that that dismissal was a proportionate response to the thing that was objectionable. So, in essence, what you need to look at is, can the dismissal be objectively justified in these circumstances? Now, going back to the facts of this particular case, what the claimant had done was, in the context of her working in a secondary school, those messages that she reposted, they were quoted from other sources and they were objecting to government policy. So they were objecting to policy about promotion of gender fluidity and the equation of same-sex marriage with marriage between a male and a man and a woman. Now we know from that Forstatter case, like I mentioned before, that those beliefs are protected by the Equality Act. And in this situation, the school's trying to justify the dismissal on the basis of the manner of expression of those posts and what they said were insulting references which could damage the school's reputation in the community. But the posts had just been reported by one parent. The school said, well, they might be seen by other people. But the courts found the language of those posts, the risks of reputational damage, were not capable of justifying the dismissal in these particular circumstances. And what's really key is, one of the Court of Appeal judges went into detail in terms of explaining why dismissal was disproportionate. But I think interestingly, the court did say it was incumbent on the school to investigate the circumstances and to figure out exactly what had gone on. But clearly they found that dismissal was a step too far. It was disproportionate in terms of the factual matrix. So nuance matters, and the context and the facts of these situations matter as well. Now, I also want to make the point that the court was very careful to clarify that despite the fact that the Equality Act gives employees a right not to be discriminated against for manifesting a belief, it doesn't mean that that right is completely unqualified either. So it's
No,
not
and
kind of free rein, is it?
it's not a free rein, and that probably goes back, circles back to the point that the school were able to carry out an investigation. So at that point, that's the point where the school then has to look and at the facts. And I think these types of issues, I think, are really, really fact sensitive. So although we can pull out some principles, it is very much going to be a case that if you end up in this position and you are carrying out an investigation, you've got to look at it really carefully. But in this one, the judges said, well, the posts themselves were considered not to be grossly offensive. I mean, there's always a risk there to say that that's looking through the eyes of one person, but or three judges rather. But and it's that's kind of an objective thing as well. But they did say that in particular, they didn't appear to be intended to incite hatred or disgust for homosexuals or trans people, and therefore would not pass that threshold of objectionability. So that's the point of, right, well, we've looked at it from the objectional perspective, and this is our view on whether or not they're offensive. I've already said that the words were not the claimant's own, but in actual fact, as part of the investigation, she had already made it clear to the school that she disagreed with some of the language that was used in the post that she had reposted, which doesn't really excuse her from the reposting, but it does go to that point of culpability. You know, these were not her actual words. And as I said, finally, you know, the school relied on this potential risk to reputation, and there just wasn't enough. There was one parent's complaint, and a lot of it was, well, there might be a risk to our reputation. So I think if there's one thing that we can take for this, if you're relying on reputational risk, you're going to need more than, well, it might damage the reputation of the employer. But I think also, I mean, if the readers of the post had associated the claimant with the school, there was no indication that she was going to bring this messaging into her work. In fact, there was evidence that she'd never done so. There were no complaints about her work. And this is, again, critical as to whether or not the school's response was justifiable. And the court simply found that it wasn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We just had a question through that just ties in with what I wanted to mention next. But first of all, someone's just asked, can they have the recording? All of our recordings go on to Spotify, Amazon Music, and Apple. So I've put the link to the Spotify channel in the chat and on NPM Legal as well. So have a look for those. Marie has asked, what about the more contentious things which have no foundation, like climate change denial or flat earth, etc.? So that's a question in relation to what's capable of being protected as a belief under the Equality Act. So, you know, climate change denial, for example. I mean, it's quite a high threshold because basically what the EAT has said in other cases that it's looked at previously is that only beliefs akin to Nazism or totalitarianism, which promote violence and hatred in the gravest form, will not be protected. Which is, you know, it's quite a high threshold, but I guess, you know, the logic is we're an open society, people can hold objectional views. I
Or
mean,
unusual, maybe unusual review, unusual views,
unusual,
perhaps.
objectional
Yeah,
views,
yeah.
unusual views, things that some individuals might take complete issue with. But I think that's part of an open democracy and open society where those views are then tested and people can have debate and discussion and form their own view about it. But I think, you know, in terms, th this is relevant. And, you know, we wanted to talk about this case today for a couple of reasons. The first is obviously the Supreme Court decision, as Adrian has said, in terms of we're not going to be looking this as a point of appeal. So this 5-year legal journey is finally at an end, and we've got this helpful guidance from the Court of Appeal in terms of how organizations and businesses need to approach these types of issues. The second reason is we've obviously recently had that Supreme Court decision in the Four Women case that's interpreted the Equality Act and specifically, you know, in relation to what sex means under that bit of legislation. I've put the link to that particular podcast episode in the chat, by the way, where we discuss it. And that's raised all sorts of questions. A lot about toilets. There's a lot of toilet discussion in terms of that judgment in relation to the decision. But thirdly, because, and we've seen issues relating to this as well, you know, where you have things like Pride Month, and a lot of, I mean, I was looking on LinkedIn yesterday, a lot of businesses have changed their company logo to incorporate the rainbow flag for Pride Month. We see some employees, and I think it's inevitable in your organizations, if even if you're fully behind something like Pride Month, there will be people sitting and working within your organizations who don't necessarily agree with all the views that are expressed. And that could be for religious reasons, it could be just for other beliefs that they have. And I think the danger for you as an employer is falling into the trap of conflating a business's kind of stated view on something and that taking precedence over all other views. And you know, and that's where you've got the potential for conflict. So essentially, where you're coming into issues like this, you've got to consider that the manifestation of a belief can be protected in law, even if it's offensively expressed. And that accords with all of the case law on freedom of expression, where it's clear that, you know, that right of expression necessarily requires the freedom to express opinions that might shock or offend people. So your kind of starting point as an employer is, well, is this a belief that is likely to pass the test in terms of being protected? You know, and for all the reasons we've discussed, it's quite a high bar to establish something as being not capable of protection, right? Second point then is be cautious when acting in relation to manifestations of a belief. And what you need to be thinking about is this proportionality test, just particularly where you're dealing with manifestations of a religion or a belief. So look at things in a proportionate way. It needs to be something that is objectively looked at. It can't just be a knee-jerk reaction to general reputational concerns or even complaints that other colleagues, other organizations you might partner or work with or have a commercial relationship with bring to your attention. And when you're looking at this proportionality test, the sort of things you need to be thinking about are, is there an alternative to dismissal? What about the expression of the view? Was it public or was it private? If it was public, who might have seen it? Was the expression associated with the employer? So, you know, we know that a parent must have seen it to be able to complain to Farmers School in the Higgs case. But actually, you know, otherwise, I think it was a private Facebook message or profile that the claimant had in that case. But
and
you
there's
need...
Oh, sorry, I just wanted to chip
yeah,
in
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
There's going to be an issue there. So I'm in this case, either the parent was a friend or... Sometimes what happens is somebody sends something on who may have been a friend, passed it on to somebody, and those are the types of things that that can then get be passed around, can't they? So, you know, that's always the consideration of the risk of that happening and what might be the outcome of that. But sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there, but I should imagine that's likely to have happened in this case.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and you've also got to look at the context of it. So, you know, was it a grossly offensive post? Was it just something that was strongly worded? And go through that assessment. Don't assume that things like expressing gender critical views is equal to transphobia. The courts have looked at this question before. They said that's unlawful stereotyping. And I think that they were critical of the school in this case for equating the parents' complaint about the post to kind of siding with some unlawful stereotyping about Mrs. Higgs's views.
Yeah, they said there was a risk that she could be seen to be homophobic or transphobic. That was
Yeah,
it. Not
exactly.
That she was, but there was a risk that she was seen to be. And they were critical of that.
Yeah.
That judgment made by the school, because there was no other evidence in her teaching and the way she behaved in school that that was the case.
Yeah, quite. And that's why the context is important, right? What overarches all of this, and it's something that's kind of front of our mind because we've been doing a heck of a lot of it this year, is training. So training for line managers, training for people involved in investigation processes and disciplinary processes, not only in terms of how you run those processes effectively and fairly, but also just an understanding of the legal framework that people are working within. I mean, it's been really revealing. Adrian and I have been around the country, literally, in the last month, talking to line managers, different manufacturing sites, and getting their insights in terms of their understanding of what's covered has been really enlightening, really. And there are some misconceptions out there which, you know, can translate into real legal risk if they're acted on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's think about what we can do, at least to try and give ourselves some tools to handle this stuff. So look at how your organization handles tension between belief expressions and inclusivity. You know, what policies have you got in place? What approaches do you take? Have you reviewed your social media and your conduct policies recently? Because, you know, if you've got a social media policy that's clearly set up, at least you're in a position to be able to set the groundwork, set the expectations of this is what you want. And that then, you know, when you go into these discussions, that's then something that you can rely on. Look at your grievance and disciplinary procedures, or, you know, if it's not set out in the procedures, think about how you're going to include these proportionality checks. I mean, certainly when you're looking at dismissing somebody, you know, most of you will be already used to the right, is dismissal the right thing here? What can we do short of dismissal? I mean, we certainly have conversations with clients about, you know, is it better to demote rather than to dismiss? That's in the context, obviously, of dismissing somebody. But equally, it's those types of mindsets of what other action can we take to address this, to deal with it, rather than going down the route of dismissal. And that's what we mean by part of the proportionality checks. Because at the end of the day, you've got to be able to demonstrate as the employer that you are looking at balancing the reputational concerns, which, you know, are rightly held, and particularly if you have the evidence to support it, but balancing that against the individual rights for their freedom of expression, because that's where you end up in a lot of difficulty, and it is an incredibly emotive issue in the workplace.
Yeah, definitely. And increasingly so. I mean, we're seeing increasing number of issues around this. And my famous last words, I said we might come up short and we haven't, but we're just about done. We've had a couple of other questions, which if you want to stick around and just hear us talk through, by all means, do. There's an intersection here with, and these questions relate to this, the law that changed in October in terms of additional duties on employers to prevent sexual harassment within the workplace. So, you know, a lot of training has been happening around organisations in relation to that. And we've had a couple of questions, or somebody's commented to say, this is something we discussed, considering sexual harassment is legally tied to personal discomfort. So that kind of subjective element of when somebody feels harassed by comments or conduct towards them. Yeah, I just wonder what you think about this, Adrian. Someone said, when we're considering the new legislation on sexual harassment, particularly the language pertaining to derogatory remarks relating to gender or offensive comments on appearance, malicious rumours relating to sexuality, should belief be incorporated into the language in our policies? And what level do we need to incorporate it and call out freedom of belief into policies generally? Which I think is obviously a really pertinent question.
Good. Yeah, it's really pertinent. And in our training, when we were talking about harassment, because there's sexual harassment and there's obviously harassment on all the other protected grounds, then, you know, one person can be offended by another person expressing views, which they can then argue as harassment. And yeah, I think it's a really valid point that proportionality and dealing with, you know, this balance, which is why things like social media is important, and also having policies on your sort of equalities in the workplace, it is really important to consider that. How much detail would you go into a policy? I think this kind of area is going to be evolving, where people might put explanations in terms of, you know, we support freedom of expression. However, it's in the manifestation of those beliefs that we will look at, because ultimately we do have to have a balance between, you know, having a safe workplace where people aren't subject to harassment, but at the same time doesn't go the other way. Bearing in mind the law when it comes to harassment, as we've been talking about in our training sessions, is measured with a sort of, would a reasonable person be offended by the comments being made? So it is very context driven. And yeah, it would be worth looking at your policies to see what kind of parameters you could put in them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the case law has been clear that just because, I mean, not from Ms. Higgs' case, but other cases that I think the AT have looked at, just because certain beliefs are protected, it doesn't mean that individuals can act with impunity in terms of how they go about expressing those beliefs. And I think
absolutely,
that's where you've got that context specific decision making, and where there's scope for tension within workplaces, because you're going to have somebody expressing a belief which they're entitled to hold and which is capable of protection, which completely crashes into offending somebody else who holds an opposing view,
or has a different protected characteristic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Just one last question I want to address as well. So thanks, Charlotte, for raising it. If a firm has not expressed their stance on current social matters, so climate change or the situation in Gaza, I presume that staff of the firm who repost on matters like these would not face reprimands. No, not necessarily. I mean, I think it doesn't have to be the case that you can only take action against employees who are expressing protected beliefs in an objectionable way if they're going against a stated policy of an organization. And I mean, interestingly, we are seeing issues with employees who are expressing views around certain political situations that other employees or individuals are then raising as being problematic. And the company may well be completely silent on those issues, not, never expressed a view. If the individual's expressing them in an objectional way and you want to interfere with that expression of a belief, that's where you're into that whole proportionality piece around, well, what action do we take and is it proportionate? And that's where you work through those steps that we've just talked about to determine whether it's legitimate to take action in respect of them. So I think don't just work on the assumption that if the company doesn't have a stated view of something, employees are therefore free to express anything that they're interested in without fear of the employer getting involved, because it's not the case. Okay, marvelous. Well, inevitably ran over time a little bit, so thanks to everybody who stuck around to hear those. I've put all of the links that you need in the chat function if you want to listen to any of the back episodes. We will be back in 2 weeks' time, as usual, for another 101 episode. And by the way, if there's anything in particular, any burning issues you'd like us to cover in these future episodes, we're just working up our program from September onwards. So any burning issues you'd like us to talk about, just drop us a line, send us an email, connect with us on LinkedIn. We'd absolutely love to hear from you. Equally, if you think anyone else would benefit from joining these sessions, please spread the word as well. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your week, and we will see you in 2 weeks' time. So, thanks, everybody.